Are you convinced that they're going to be okay against the Avs? I know that they've had some trouble putting the puck in the net consistently in their last five games. Their record hasn't really been that great. And MacKinnon is just outstanding. So they do have some hurdles in this series.
They do. And they've got their big line has to get going or they're going to be in trouble. Their power play hasn't been good enough. Their first line hasn't been good enough. And I thought even in game two, which they lost in overtime, I thought they were outplayed badly and with lots of speed. And so game three was even worse, obviously. They were down badly and, you know, huge scores. And so I think they need to really get back on track. If the big guys don't get going, I think they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, Eric Francis wrote an article for Sportsnet.ca, and he was kind of making the comparison between Mitch Marner in terms of his size and Johnny Gaudreau in terms of his size, and that Mitch Marner's proven that there is an ability when playoffs get heavier and you kind of have to be stronger, that there is still room for these small, fast, skilled players. But what can he do to get going, especially when they're lined up against MacKinnon and foreseeably one of their major responsibilities is going to be defending that line?
Well, I think you got to break the line up. If it's a line matchup issue, then you got to break the line up. I mean, Bill Peters is smarter than I am as far as coaching. But if that's the sole thing is that they're playing the big line against Nathan MacKinnon's line, then, you know, which is a great line, then break the lineup. Spread them out through the lineup. But I think Johnny's just got to get going here. And all of them, all of the big three, all of Monty and Lindholm, all have to get going.
It's remarkable. We'll get to the Leafs in a sec. But what happened to Tampa from being up 3-0 in game one is remarkable. Can you compare it to any series you've seen, any playoff run for a team? These tend to happen more in the first round where we're utterly and completely shocked. But what was your reaction to the four-game sweep?
Utter and complete shock.
Yeah.
I don't recall in my adult lifetime following hockey as closely as I do, 32 years now, I think, since I got in the business, I don't recall a collapse like this. I'm not sure what to say. I picked them on national TV to win the cup, and they're out after four games. So I'm as stunned as anyone. And they went down without a whimper. Like they just got their asses kicked on every square inch of the ice. Like, this is one where you can't point to one thing and say, oh, the power play failed us, or our goaltending wasn't good enough. Nothing was good enough. They got killed.
And I think that that's the most surprising thing. You hit the nail right on the head. It's where was the pushback? You're losing a series clinching game 7-3? 7-3.
Yeah.
I think that every single person needs to take a long look at themselves, because that was the most surprising thing. Can you put together two good periods? Are you losing games where you're actually playing well? And that was never really the case.
And this is why they vote on major awards before the playoffs. Like Kucherov, he's gonna get the Hart Trophy as MVP. He wouldn't get one vote after this series.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah. Do you look and go? Does it stick? I mean, it's a long summer for a Steve Stamkos. It's a long summer for a John Cooper. Tell me what you think this does also to Braden Point. Does it do anything to his negotiation ability? He's a great player. He's going to get paid, buddy. A 6-week, 7-week, 8-week playoff run, and he's got more bargaining power at the table this summer, doesn't he?
Well, he's got less based on their playoff. He's got less, but it doesn't. You know, you're talking about a microscopic reduction in what he's worth, or he's still going to get paid big time either by Tampa or offer sheeted. He might get offer sheeted. He's, I think, one of the biggest risks to get offer sheeted. Great player, quiet in this series, but they were all quiet. It was like, I felt like saying last night watching the game, I asked the linesman to put a second puck on the ice so that Tampa could touch it. Like, it was no fluke. They got outplayed, outworked, out-hustled, out-shot, out-chanced, out-everything.
Does this say a lot for John Tortorella? I think all of us who've thought he's been a good coach and understand why he continues to get opportunities are, you know, we're impressed. But this is, when you shock the world like this, this is how Mike Babcock earned his initial reputation, beating the Red Wings in 2003. This is how it can happen for a coach. Not that he needs to establish more of a reputation, but it's more evidence that this is one of the better coaches in the NHL and has been for more than a decade.
Yes, I think what happened with Torts is he won a cup and was acknowledged as a great coach, then failed a little bit in Vancouver, went in the dressing room against us when I was with Calgary, and has been dismissed as this hothead and not a great coach. And all. He's a great coach. He's a great guy. And, yeah, I think this has turned a lot of heads, and as it should. And, you know, conversely, a lot of people will now be questioning John Cooper. I don't. I think John Cooper's a great coach and a great guy. I think his team failed on him. I think they need to really think hard about how they put this team together. But they might be the Washington Capitals of a year ago. They might have had this needed this failure to turn into a Stanley Cup champion in the next 24 months.
All right, before Leafs, Brian Burke, our guest, by the way, game on 680 News tonight and CBC, both obviously starting at 7 o'clock. Islanders-Penguins, your level of surprise with this one. I think a lot of us might have had it as a coin flip series, but it's a strange thing to watch a team that's fully healthy, fully constituted. Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Murray, they're all there, be done in four games, clearly.
I picked it as a coin toss series. I felt that this one and the Winnipeg-St. Louis series were too close to call. I picked them both as a coin toss, and the one, I look smart. It's 2-2 going back to Winnipeg. This one, I look like an idiot because it was a sweep. I look like that a lot, by the way. I don't need a lot of help to look like an idiot. This one here is, these guys are, this is kind of a cosmic, this is kind of a weird vibe these guys have. They're going to be trouble in the next round, too. Like, they have a confidence right now that belies their abilities. They're playing way above their weight class. These guys right now are really hard to beat, and they were hard to beat during the regular season. Over 100 points, one of the best defensive teams in the league. They're boring. They're a typical Lou Lamoriello team. They're boring, but they're deadly. Like, I'm not sure anyone wants to play them in the next round.
And they have been putting the puck in the net, too, right? 2 4-goal games against the Penguins, 2 3-goal games against the Penguins to finally eliminate them. One team that's certainly not boring and doesn't necessarily rely on their defensive prowess a ton, the Toronto Maple Leafs. In their last game against Boston, Game 3, to go up 2-1 in the series, do you think that they severely outplayed the Bruins? Or more so, both teams had good games and Toronto was just able to stave off that top line down the stretch?
I'd say more of the second. I don't think I thought both teams played well. I thought the Bruins were a little flat. It's a weird, weird series. Like I said, I had dinner with Mike Milbury last night. We were talking about this. It's hard to explain how the Bruins could play game two with this ferocity and this physical edge, mm-hmm. and then play game three so in such a docile, such a tame manner. And I think a lot of it's the officiating. I think the officials, my information was that the NHL had a call with the officials after the Bruins game, after game two, and that resulted in much calmer games, not just with the Leafs game, but the game the night before with San Jose and the other teams, and said, you know, crack the whip, tighten up. So that favors Toronto, obviously, if they're calling it tight. I think you'll see a much different game tonight. I think you'll see a Bruins team, again, is a little bit unleashed and trying to, you know, try to win the physical side of things. But I think the Leafs were magnificent in Game 3. I thought they were really sharp. And, you know, 20 years from now, I'll be telling how Mitch Marner blocked 7 shots with his face at the end of the game. And, I thought they played really well. I thought they played a great game strategy-wise from start to finish.
Yeah, and the matchups too. I mean, home ice can often get exaggerated, overrated. It can become a bit of a media cliche. But when you look at the distribution, 5-on-5, it was almost 90% of the time the Tavares line against the Bergeron line. This allowed Matthews, Kapanen, and Janssen to do what they did. They had Muzzin, Zaitsev out there, so they got Riley free against other Boston forward units. That was a masterclass for Mike Babcock in terms of how to utilize your home ice. It's something he won't get to do in Game 5.
Correct, but I think they need to worry about Game 4 first, and if they can get up 3-1, I think they'll see a different team. Like the Bruins in this playoff, it seems like they need to be up against it a little bit or somehow under pressure to play their best. But I think you'll see a different game tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
How would you assess the goaltending so far in the series? Because last year, obviously, there were moments. Both goalies, I think Freddie got pulled twice. Rask got pulled once. I think they've both I can't think of a bad goal for either goalie. There might be one total that either team's goalie would want back, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think goaltending has been, they've been brick walls in both ends. Both guys have been sharp. Both guys have been consistent. Both guys have made big saves. So, no, I don't think there's, I think it's a coin toss right now. I think Freddie Anderson's been unreal, even in game two. When they lost, it could have been a landslide, and he was terrific, I thought.
Yeah, that's what Greg was saying earlier today, that it could have easily been 7-1, easily, if Frederik Andersen wasn't on his game in game two. The debate rages on. Mitch Marner or Austin Matthews, who'd you rather, in a sense? And you talked about Marner's two block shots. We have his drawing a penalty shorthanded for a penalty shot goal. He's just been fantastic. But does that have to do with more of who he's playing with, whereas Austin Matthews has Janssen and Kapanen with him, and that could be kind of hindering him offensively?
Well, I think it's kind of, I think first off, it's very subjective discussion. So this is like, if I asked you, Ashley, who's the best-looking actor in Hollywood? You might say George Clooney. You might say whatever. You say to me, who's the best-looking actress in Hollywood? And Greg and I would disagree on, you know, whatever. Like, it could be
Gina Davis,
it's very
obviously.
Subjective. It's very subjective. So I think it's a fair debate that could be won either way. If you do a poll on the phones, right now, after Mitch Marner blocked 18 shots with his face to end the game the other night, people would be picking Mitch Marner. I think if you ask hockey people, who said 31 GMs, soon to be 32 with Seattle coming in, I think they'd say, before this playoff, they'd say it's Austin Matthews. He's a center with size. Center is a much more prized position than wing. And now you're getting some votes from Mitch Marner because he's doing some magical things.
Is that dichotomy shifting? Is it still much more valuable for center than wing, or is that gap kind of closing a little bit, even though you would still give the edge to centerman?
No, it's not closing because of the defensive zone coverage. The way our teams play in the NHL, the center, and not that Austin is a fanatic about defense, but the D-zone coverage where the center, like you look at John Tavares, he's a Picasso. Mm-hmm. He's a masterpiece because he plays all 200 feet, which is an overused term. But from one kickboard at one end of the rink to the other kickboard, John Tavares is an excellent player offensively and defensively. Austin is not a fanatic about defense, but he's not bad. For an offensive player, he's not bad. What they have to do in their own end is so much more work and so much more thinking. And I was a winger, by the way. People always think I was a defenseman or something else. I was a winger. Being a winger, that's the easiest job on the ice.
Yeah.
Being a center is much harder. So, no, they're way more valuable than wingers are.
Do you think Mitch would ever play? I know that was discussed, but yeah, the road's littered with guys that get almost all the excellent players play center in the junior ranks, and you're not sure. I bet you when you had Kadri, right, you weren't 100% sure. Can this guy check at an NHL level as a center? And in the first couple of years, that was a struggle, which is why he was with the Marlies, right?
Yeah, well, he needed work, but we drafted him as a center, and we were confident he could play center. He needed work, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
And the fact is, a lot of guys that play center at younger ages end up on the wing because it is easier. In your own end, you just got to stand in one spot, basically. You kind of move 6 feet one way, move 6 feet the other way, back up a little bit. But you basically are occupying a small patch of ice. The center's got to follow the play, follow the puck. It's much harder.
There's only one super happy general manager at the end of the year winning the Stanley Cup, and there's accomplishments. There's good. I don't think there's only one good season, but you got to experience that once with Anaheim. When the shoe's on the other foot, and let's say you're Doug Wilson and Pete DeBoer in San Jose, and let's say they're crashing out, or you're in Pittsburgh, or you're in Tampa. What are those conversations like as to when to stay the course, Brian, and when to sort of blow it up a little bit? I know when Detroit lost to Colorado in 96, had they not even made it past that St. Louis game with that famous Yzerman goal, there would have been a lot more changes. But Brendan Shanahan kind of fell in their lap because of the Hartford situation, and they traded Paul Coffey and Keith Primeau for him. What are the conversations like in terms of can we revolutionize our culture? Can we get an impact player? And when do you just say, we can bring that same group back and we won't have the same result again?
Well, you used to have a window. Everyone used to talk about the window. So you got all your key players at a certain age range. So you got them under contract, and you have a window. And you say, okay, in the next 24 months, we have a good chance of winning it. Now the issue is, and no one seems to talk about this except Sportsnet. Now the issue is the cap window. How long can you keep your team together? This will be Tampa's issue. Now they're out, and Braden Point might get offer sheeted, might not, but whatever they pay him, now they're up against the cap, and certain guys have to go. You look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, they got a cap window. Jake Gardner's long gone, in my view. I think that Nylander's long gone in the summer based on their cap window, regardless of how they do in this series or future series. The problem with San Jose is, like, if you're saying you're post-mortem now, you're out, is they loaded up at the trade deadline last year and this year because they thought they were close. And so now the cost of loading up the deadline and the draft picks and the guys you trade, and Doug Wilson's done a great job, and Peter DeBoer's a great coach.
Yes.
But now they're both watching on TV pretty soon, in my view. I think they'll be out after the next game. And now you look back and say, okay, we spent all that. It's like you wake up some night after a bender, and you're like, you look in your wallet, you're like, what? It's like, what do I do? What do we do? We spent all these assets. We had nothing to show for it. What do we do? So it's really hard. That's why I talk at the trade deadline. There's only one parade. But like 15 teams made deals at the trade deadline to try and win. And most of them are foolish. Most of them are suicidal.